Hello, it's great to have you with me. I'm Kim Clyden, former ABC radio presenter and children's book author, creating a community of people who care about children. How do we nurture creative, connected, resilient, emotionally intelligent, and empowered children? And they say it takes a village. So if you're feeling overwhelmed by the responsibility, you're not alone. I believe we can change the narrative for our children, but to do that, we need to change our story. Every so often, I meet someone whose work feels like a lighthouse, steady, bright, and guiding us to a more humane future. My guest today is one of those people. Michael G. Neese is the president of Our Future is Kind, a keynote speaker, author, educator, and a man on a mission to help us harness the power of kindness to build better workplaces, stronger communities, and a future that honours every person's worth. His career is almost cosmic in scope. From corporate training rooms to planetariums, he's delivered more than 750 sessions on team building, psychological safety, universal curiosity, and our shared responsibility to one another. He teaches kindness not as a soft skill, but as a structural advantage, a performance enhancer, a leadership strategy. Through his book, In Kind, Michael gives leaders a roadmap for consciously crafting meaningful careers and cultures. And through his podcast, Our Future is Kind, he invites voices from across sectors to answer three powerful questions. What should the future be like? Who will be there? And how do we craft it carefully into something we deserve? His worldview is shaped not just by the professional spaces he's led, but the personal space he inhabits. As a father to members of the LGBTQIA+ community, as a fierce advocate for inclusion, and as the co-founder of the Human Summit, an event designed to bring humanity back into how we gather, lead, and more importantly, connect. Michael believes that kindness, curiosity, creativity, and an adventurous spirit should be the hallmarks of our most honoured citizens. And I could not agree more. Hello, Michael. You must have been raised by wonderful parents. What are your fondest memories from childhood?
I was raised by two PhD scientists, and my favourite memories were being allowed to read and to ask all kinds of questions. I remember being a little boy and walking up to my mom, who was grading graduate level papers and labs that had been done in her biochemistry teaching, and just asking questions about what it all meant, and learning that my mom was incredibly smart. And my father was also incredibly smart, and just valuing that as a child. I also remember as a little kid watching Star Trek, which if you're not terribly familiar with it, it's all about people in the future having adventures, trying to live out a value system that has always appealed to me ever since I learned about it. So those are some of my fondest memories as a child.
School years can often be challenging, sometimes traumatic for some of the people I've spoken with. As you grew, what did you value about life through those school years?
The friendships were the most important thing for me. It was connections to other children my age, other young people my age, but it was also the relationships with the teachers. Here I am in my mid-50s, and I still am in touch with three different teachers who taught me through my youth. My English teacher from 10th and 11th grade, I take her out every once in a while to go have tea or a breakfast, and we just laugh together. And I've always been excited about those kinds of connections.
Where did your scholarly endeavors lead you in relation to your career once you left high school? Did you go to college?
I went to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. as the home of the Tar Heels. And then eventually I went and got a master's degree in teaching through an online program through a college that was up in Detroit, Michigan.
What career did you come to out of that? Because often people get a degree and they find it difficult to get a job.
Well, my undergraduate degree is in physics. That's never been something I've done, though I was briefly a high school teacher in chemistry and physics. But I've been in six different industries now. I've been a martial arts instructor. If you've ever been to a planetarium where they turn the stars up on the dome, I was the voice of Meteor Mike teaching people about Orion's Belt and the Dog Star and here's the moon and telling people about the phases of the moon. So those are some of my industries. I've also been in pharma as a SaaS programmer, curating data so that people could find the scientific discoveries embedded within. I am now a keynote speaker and writer.
Well, you've got the voice for all of that, obviously. Given that you loved Star Trek so much, which is something I watched here in Australia as well growing up, the connection to the planets and the planetarium, I mean, is that something that was like a boyhood dream come true?
A 13-year-old version of me would have been delighted to find out that that was in my future, to know that I could get into essentially a virtual spaceship that would be at my command, where I could fly through the stars and go pretty much wherever I wanted and take audiences with me and hear them gasp in excitement over what we would discover together.
Are you still enamored with the stars and the planets?
Oh, absolutely. One of the first things that I do after getting out of a movie theater is I trip, because I'm stepping off the curb while looking up to see what stars are overhead at the time. It is a wonder of the modern times that we do have great technologies, ones that allow any average Joe or Jane to pick up a mobile device and look up and find nebulae and galaxies and star clusters, as well as, you know, big constellations. So there's a lot of wonderment to be had.
Well, I say wonder and awe is key for our health, both mental, physical, that research is now revealing. Obviously, wonder and awe has been a big part of your life. How did your parents support that through your nurtured years?
It is funny to remember how many times my mom would come to me with a newspaper clipping or a magazine article and shove it in my hands and say, look, there's an earthquake here, or look, there's a volcano erupting, or look what they discovered in this corner of the sky. She was always trying to nurture whatever interests I had and show me that there is always something to discover. There's always something to explore, and always something that will feed your spirit and your heart. My father was and is a very kind-hearted man, and he grew up in stark poverty and knew that education would be a vehicle to a better life, that the more you know, the more you can pull yourself out of dire circumstances and into something that's better, something that will feed your soul and also put food on the table. And so that has been more his contribution to my life, is reminding me the value of education and the fun that can be had with it.
Well, it seems like, you know, you're still centered by education and connection. And a lot of your work, you facilitate that very thing around team building and kindness. When did you come to the realization that was maybe your role in life now?
Oh, my goodness. The aspect of kindness being at the core of my value system, I think I've known that for a very long time, ever since I was a young person watching the Star Trek, or being around my parents, being around my sister. I valued it deeply. But I think it was after I'd entered the working world and found that not everybody is kind, and even the kind ones are not always kind all the time, I recognized the value of having a boss, a coworker, or just somebody that you're interacting with. When they are practicing kindness with you, it means the world in that moment. It can change your entire day for somebody to just give you a bit of grace. And when somebody is really unpleasant to you, it also, it casts a tone across your entire day. And you can find yourself reliving entire conversations that you had with somebody that were brilliant, or where there was a lot of anger and difficulty. And so I would say it was in the last 4 or 5 years that I recognized I needed to highlight what happens in a workplace or in our personal lives if you are practicing kindness and you're really conscious about it, and it becomes a part of your value system to the point where it is your compass. And so that's it. Yeah, it was 3 years ago that I started writing a book, and 2 years ago that I finished it and published it, called In Kind. And that's it is a work of passion. It is a work of excitement, because I feel like everybody has the ability to be kind. It costs nothing, and it's inherent in all of us if you can just dig down and find it in those moments where it's hard to get to. That's where the magic lies.
You just mentioned in there that it's something that drives all of these benefits, you know, especially in workplaces. How have you been able to quantify that? I mean, what's the social impact structure that you can understand those benefits from?
CEOs and C-suite leaders are very keen on the idea that you need to retain great talent. You need to attract great talent. And so if the retention rate goes up, people notice. If the attrition rate goes up, people notice. Attrition happens when you have lots of managers who are unkind, when you have a very unclear value system at your company, when people are giving lip service to a corporate culture that you think is there but really isn't. And so by building beautiful corporate culture where there is lots of kindness, it is quantifiable. You have better retention rates. You have people making better decisions that are data-driven, not emotion-driven. You find that you're more innovative. You find that people are more efficient. And so these are quantifiable measures that you can find statistics about all across any industry. But then it's also in your personal life, where if you are giving that grace to somebody else, you find that you can get that grace back. And that is also quantifiable in what is your mood from day to day. You can write that down. All you have to do is just keep a diary of how are you feeling each day and what key interactions have you had. It correlates exactly. When you find that somebody's been kind to you, your day is so much better. And when somebody has been ungracious and thoughtless and casually cruel, you find that your day has suffered as a result.
Why then do you think it's such a challenge for people to embrace and adopt kind behaviors?
I think one of the big things is that we are flying on autopilot a lot of the time. You wake up, you make your breakfast, you hop on the bus, you go to work, you do the work thing, you come home, you put dinner on the table, and then you watch a bit of TV or you scroll, and then you go to sleep, and then you wake up the next day and you do it all again. It is hard to slow that process down and interrupt it for long enough to say, why am I doing these things? To whose benefit is it that I go to work and do the work thing? How am I approaching the bus driver every morning? Is it with a smile? And am I just in my own little zone and I put in my headphones and I don't listen and I don't pay attention to people? I think that is the biggest obstacle right now, is that we think we have to be efficient. We think we have to achieve, and we forget about living. And living a value system is the most powerful thing that we can do.
You're a father who's raised some pretty amazing humans, from what I can understand. How have you demonstrated kindness in their lives? And what practical steps have you taken to help them practice it?
Kim, I think this is something we share in common. I talk to my kids about how I don't get it right. I ask for forgiveness for those times when I don't. I interact with them in ways where I try to be curious, where I try to discover what is going on in their worlds instead of assuming, It is so easy to say, oh, I know what you're going to say next. Oh, I know how you think. I know how you act. And then to fill in the gaps with my guesses. And the guesses aren't always right. And so I try not to have too many guesses that leak out. I try to simply ask, when you did this thing, can you tell me more about it? Why was that the choice? What were you trying to accomplish? Do you think there's a better way that you could do that thing next time? As opposed to immediately saying, why did you do that? And getting angry. So I think it's giving a lot of grace to those kids and really trying to listen to them, because now they'll open up to me. Now they'll tell me the things that are important. When they get things wrong, they know that dad does too. So it's okay to say it, and also for them to ask forgiveness.
You've made yourself available to them, see, through shared experiences. And I found that worked really well with my children at age-appropriate stages. I'd tell them something about my childhood and how that affected me or how it challenged me. And in sharing those stories, you become human, I think, to your children. You're not just a father to your children, but I read that you're a father to members of the LGBT community. How did that work come about, and why are you so interested in wrapping your arms around that community?
I think that a lot of kids today don't see gender as binary. And if they're attracted to someone, they simply follow that. And I think that that is true for so many kids. The whole idea that there is a non-binary option now on a lot of questionnaires that you'll have to fill out. I think it's because of our youth. I think it's because they have recognized things don't have to be this way because mom and dad said they have to be this way. We should be following what feels right. And so all three of my kids say that they are somewhere in that gender fluid state, and who they date really is based on the personality of the person more than it is on any other factor. And so for me, it is really important that anybody in the LGBT community recognize you have value. You are loved. If you don't feel like the people that are in your life right now value you and love you, reach out to me. I'm happy to talk to you and point you to good resources, because you matter. And you wouldn't be here in this universe unless you had a very particular song to sing or dance to dance or thing to contribute to all of the rest of us. And you can't do that if you're hiding who you are.
That is such a beautiful way of expressing something that's actually unfolding, you know, before us right through these times. And it reminds me about the situation we're finding in our schools. I mean, you honoured your teachers when you spoke about their kindness and compassion towards you as a student. What do you think we need to do to introduce this kindness to schools in the way you have with corporates and workplaces?
If you talk to any teacher at any level, you will find that they are worried about things. They're worried about bullying, whether it's in person or it's cyberbullying. They are worried about consumption of materials that are online that are unhealthy for our kids to get to. And so trying to infuse more kindness means teaching them the ways of having curious conversations, not having judgment, not stereotyping, making sure that the parents get brought into the room for discussions about appropriate use and appropriate timing of use of social media and how to restrict those things in ways where the kids can still get the benefit from the information that's out there, but don't have the detriment of just being unleashed on all of the people who are out on the internet at the same time. Some have your kids' best interests at heart, and some are predators and don't really care that your kids are watching something really scary or bad. So I think a lot of educators really care about having that level of kindness, but they don't necessarily have the verbiage around it. They don't necessarily have all of the tools at front of mind. And so, yeah, I think that is one of the important ways of trying to infuse the lives of young people with the right tools, is to talk to those educators, make sure that they understand there are ways of fighting bullying, and it's not to condemn the bullies. It is to isolate them so that they can't do any harm, and to make sure that they get care that they need so that they understand better ways of interacting as well.
Yeah, well, it's a global issue right now, and we're not seeing much relief. I'm wondering how the Australian government's ban on, you know, under 16s on social media is going to impact that. It'll be interesting to follow. Your podcast is called The Future is Kind. What's your vision for a kind future? What does that look like for you?
For me, the ideal kind future is Star Trek. It's the idea that there is some version of us in the future where it does not matter if you are male or female or an android or you're blue or you're green or you're a shimmering orb of light. It does not matter the container that you show up in. What matters is that you are showing up in good faith, that you are curious, that you have a sense of adventure, that you value the other people who are sitting at the table with you. For me, that is the future that I want, is one where you showed up to the table and you're here in good faith and you're going to work with me. Well, that's wonderful. I don't care that you are 3 inches tall or that you are a swimming fish creature from a different planet. It doesn't matter. What matters is this shared heart that we all have.
Michael, that is so beautiful and such a wonderful way to wrap up this glorious conversation that you've honoured me with today. And I just saw your jumper, and if it was fully zipped up, you'd probably look like you're on a Star Trek ship right now.
There you go. I'm ready.
I love it. Thank you so much for your time and your kindness. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Kim. It's been an honour.
Reminding us that kindness isn't a gesture, it's an architecture. Michael G. Neese there today with me. It is something we design into our families, our classrooms, our workplaces, and ultimately our own future. His belief that every person is inherently worthy of kindness isn't idealistic, it's profoundly practical. Because cultures that treat people with dignity don't just feel better, they perform better. They innovate more. They create more, they care more. You'll find all the links to Michael, his book In Kind, his podcast, and Our Future is Kind in the show notes. I encourage you to explore his work, especially if you're raising or leading the next generation of curious, compassionate, adventurous humans. Because creating a kinder world isn't a dream. It's a daily practice, and it begins with us. Thank you for your time today. I look forward to bringing you another story next week. And if you'd like to connect with me, please do. Reach out via LinkedIn, Facebook, and of course, my website, kimclyden.com. Until then, be kind and be the change you want to see in the world.